Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Well, hello, Julie Foster from the UK.
Hello, April.
Look at that. Right on time.
Snap.
That's right. I love it when my brains are here. And she's popped in from the UK from across the pond. We're going to talk about a very sensitive, tender subject, but she's such a fun person. We're not going to be sad. We're going to be renewed. We're going to be restored, and we're going to find joy. We're going to talk about the loss of a spouse. And I couldn't imagine losing Mr. Magnificent after 37 years. I just had to crawl down in there with him, you know, but you still have to find yourself. And Julie has worked with so many great people. I mean, she's worked with the police department there. She's worked with women that are really trying to recover. She's got a great online program. You know, she's coaching. And she has a very compelling story on how she lost her parents at a very early age and was raised by grandparents. So I'm going to let her fill in all the white spaces for us here on the edge. Welcome, beautiful, to me and my brains. There she is, Julie Foster. Oh.
I'm so happy to be here. This has been, you know, we've had this booked for a while, this call. So it's just been, and then suddenly the date is here, you know, so it's really exciting.
We're going to talk about loss, but instead of really kind of looking at it as a loss, we're going to talk about transition. I don't think anything is ever finite. I don't think anything is ever over, but it's how we carry it, how we process it. So go back to your childhood. Let's start there and then bring us up to where you are now.
Yeah, sure. I think I didn't lose both my parents, just to clarify. My parents divorced when I was only two. My mum stayed with me, and we all went to my grandparents. So I was brought up by three adults. So I had, you know, two mums and a granddad, and it was wonderful, really wonderful. And I had a really happy childhood. And it's kind of, I'm 65 on Monday. And probably thank you so much. Thank you. I should be celebrating that in style. But I didn't realize till I did some inner work, you know, some spiritual work on myself, because I'm a spiritualist, so I do this all the time. And I worked on forgiving my dad just a couple of years ago for not being around, you know, when I was growing up. So he was alive, but he wasn't with us. And that has an impact on you, right? It does. And I didn't really know how much it had impacted on me in terms of viewing it as a loss, you know, losing a person not being there in your life. So we're all good now with that. But I didn't have to do anything. I chose to look at it in a different light. And you know, he's passed away now, but I love him. He was my dad. And I forgive him, and I, you know, I don't hold any grudge. I don't hold any pain around it. And that's, you know, that's similar to the work that I'm doing with ladies who have lost their spouse.
You know, and I'm going to chime in on this. How do I say this gently? Is that some people just don't have the capacity, Julie. They just don't have the bandwidth. They don't have the courage. They don't have the strength. Sometimes they just don't want to be parents. I don't know what your father's situation was, okay? No. But we have to allow space for those individuals too, because they're not able to go on that journey with you. And sometimes having those individuals front and center can be more destructive than it is from them at a distance, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind sharing here at all, but he was an alcoholic. So, you know, my mom chose to choose a different life for us, because to stay with him, she loves him to this day.
Of course.
But she always says, you know, you can love somebody, but it doesn't mean that you can live with them.
No.
And it doesn't, you know, it's all good. And she never dissed my father to me at all. I sort of discovered for myself through my life. But yeah, I try to understand. I just tried to understand. And he had to forgive himself. Yeah, of course.
Himself. I mean, could you just, you know, hindsight being 2020, growing up, maybe he would have been, you know, abusive to you, your mom. He's abusive to himself. He had a disease. Alcoholism is a disease.
Absolutely. Right?
It's not, you know, once you get caught up in it. And, you know, so people have to do that. So you springboard and you've worked with the police department. Tell us about working with the police department and human resources there in the UK. Because I'm telling you, it's a far cry from what it is here in the US. I had a police officer that I interviewed, actually, from the UK. And you don't even carry a gun. Here, they don't only carry a gun, they shoot you in the back and they put the knee on your neck. It's crazy. What is it like there in the UK for police officers?
Yeah, it is. And funnily enough, during my service, I was there about 17 years and used to talk to a lot of officers. And we had an officer who did an exchange program and came to the US for, I think he was there about a month. And then he came back and he did a big presentation to a lot of us to show us the differences, you know, between how they police in the US and how they police in the UK. And of course, the gun issue was a major thing. It was a major difference. And he said he made some good friends when he was in the US. But most of the officers said to him they could never police here because they couldn't imagine policing without being armed. And he said, and I could never work here because I can't imagine my work depending on the fact that I'm armed.
Right. And
so it's very different because we use a lot of conversation, negotiation, persuasion. You know, there's force used. Of course, there is when people are being violent and sometimes they have to use that force. But it is very different. But my role there was to manage grievances and mediate arguments, you know, between officers and staff, because they're just human beings like everybody else and they have their disputes, and to not get the dispute sorted can cost a lot in terms of lives. And, you know, because they're on your team, if someone hasn't got your back because you've had an argument about something and you haven't resolved it, it's just dangerous. So it was interesting, very interesting work, and valuable too.
You have a beautiful voice inflection. I could see how you could be a very good mediator and kind of calm
things down. Thank you.
Like, okay, everybody, let's quiet. Let's
just calm it all down. Yeah.
But much like mediating that, you know, the key, I think, is listening.
And if COVID, so we say two of these and one of these, use it in that proportion.
Absolutely. And if COVID has taught me nothing else, I have so much more patience. Yeah. I'm pretty a patient person too, but I would go from a flicker to a flame. I'm a firecracker. I can pop off. I can get hot, but I don't do that now. You know, I don't do it now because I'm taking into consideration the situation. I'm taking into consideration that my minor inconvenience is minuscule to what's going on in the rest of the world. I take into consideration that life is short. It's not just about me, but it's about you and every other individual on this planet. And our time here is limited. Our time here is short.
Yeah, it's. I agree. And I think I have many friends and peers in my group that say the same, you know, that they kind of, we've all had a realize, not all, but a lot of us have had a realization, an awakening into brotherhood.
Right.
You know, we're none of us are on our own. None of us are alone. We are all part of something bigger, and we're all connected to each other. So, you know, there's a great saying, isn't there? You can't hurt anybody else without hurting yourself.
Absolutely.
Because you do. So it's been a wisdom builder this time, I think. Yeah.
So I experienced the loss about 3 months ago. My mother.
Yes, you told me.
My goodness. I tell you, we were peanut butter and jelly. It's my sweet thing. And but the transition, it was a transition. It was angelic. It was kind. We were together. I gave her permission to go. She gave me permission to stay. There was no unanswered questions. There was no lies, no deception. You know, everybody doesn't have that opportunity.
They don't.
Some people are taken suddenly. Some people are taken through the drudgery of long-term illness and watching a person, you know, deteriorate. There's unanswered questions, hostility, animosity, fear, children, ex-wives, you know, financial liability, all of that. All of that plays into this thing that we call death and separation. Some want cremation. Some, my brother told me when he passed, he says, okay, I can't stand to be sick. Just get a stick of dynamite and stick it in my butt and blow me up.
That's one way to go, isn't it?
I'm allowed to go out with a bang, right? And you know, I kind of chuckle, but when they found him dead, with no warning, that was his blow up.
Yeah.
And I have yet to really have that meltdown, that emotional cry, because I know that it's not over. And I know that if he had stayed here and he was sick or debilitated, it would have been worse for him. But you're working with people through that. Share a little bit about your story, as much as you want to share about your personal loss and the work that you're doing now, because it's so important. And people don't talk about death. And, you know, trust me, we all going to get there.
It's one of the anomalies that really fascinates me. Is this illusion that we appear to live in, that the people around us are going to be there forever. Mm-hmm. They're not. Be that we depart or they depart. I call it emigrating to heaven. You know, it's just they're emigrating before I do. And but my
passport, because they're not taking passports, right?
No, exactly. You know, it's like, but my experience, you know, you mentioned it there about losing somebody suddenly. And my husband, I've been married for 41 years and got married very young. So we had a whole growing up together and bringing children into the world and grandchildren. And we built this wonderful family. We didn't talk about death very much. He'd been ill a couple of times and we just talked about recovery and how he'd get better. And he went to work one morning and just didn't come home. He had a massive heart attack when he was at work. So I have experienced that in the sudden loss, you know, of somebody. And it's always traumatic when you lose someone you love, but there's a real shock trauma thing that happens. The disbelief in there's no preparation. There's nothing you could have done. You cannot go back and say things you wish you'd said. You can never do that. But you said that you had lovely time with your mum, and actually a really good friend of mine has just had about a month with her mother. She and passed beautifully, and they made memory books and they had such beautiful times together before she passed. And that felt very different. So, you know, you could feel, a person like me can feel that you've had something stolen, you know. It's someone's come and snatched it away from you. And it's kind of like a double whammy. It felt like, you know, not just the loss, but the shock of it as well.
Right.
So that was 5.5 years ago now. So I have taken my own journey and my own experience, added to 30 years of coaching skills, negotiating skills, persuasion skills, all of those sort of soft skills used in my work, to bring all of that into my basket to say, well, what am I going to do now? Mm-hmm. You know, what am I going to do? And I chose to say yes to life. And that is what I now call my program that I work with ladies. It's say yes to life, because I do believe totally my life is precious. All of our lives are precious. And for me to hide myself away, not express everything about myself as a person, not grow anymore, not develop, you know, go in the cupboard or under the duvet and just stay there because my husband passed away, that felt wrong to me. I thought that was dishonorable, actually. And I thought, God hasn't put me here to do that. His will is better than mine, right? There's something here for me to do. And actually, in the last 5 years, I have done really wonderful things for me and for other people because of this loss. So that's what I want to do. I'm passionate now about helping women to change their perspective, because they don't have to die too.
Right. You mentioned two things I want to tap into. You mentioned God.
Yes.
It's my friend. You know, we got a real
close. Always mine too.
But a lot of people get angry with God.
They do. They do, because, you know, it's quite natural to want to blame, isn't it? You know,
he's a thief. He's a thief. And, you know, why would you do this to me? And, you know, I was talking to my mother and I was saying, Mama, this is not fair. And she goes, oh, yes, it's very fair. You know, she says, if you drive, you're going to get a turn at the wheel. So, you know, a lot of people suffer with that. There's so many stages and these different stages of grief. You know, I pop in and out of them. You know, I didn't have any idea I was going to have a meltdown about my mother in the grocery store.
No, it's not linear. Not linear. It's more like a spiral. And we continue to travel up and down this spiral, which, as you say, comes in unexpected waves. Mm-hmm. I call grief a she. I don't know why, I just do. And I call her, okay, so she comes visiting, you know, and sometimes she hasn't been invited, but she comes anyway. And it's like having a guest at your house that is not, you didn't know was coming.
Absolutely.
They're unexpected. And your house might not be quite as you want it to be. It's not all in order. You don't have any food in. You don't have anything to give your guest. But she's coming in anyway.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's learning to actually welcome that rather than resist it all the time.
Right.
Because I think that causes people more stress when they get into this. You know, I see it. I mean, a lot of groups on Facebook, for example, you know, where people are grief groups, let's call them. You know, and there's lots of people that just regurgitate the same words all the time. And I feel so sad because they stay in that sadness, in that place where they don't see any way out. They don't see how they can live any differently. I had someone on the other day, and she said to me, I don't make any goals anymore. I don't have any, you know, so she's feeling purposeless.
Right.
She doesn't feel like, and so I, you know, she asked me what I would advise. And I said to her, just really simple things. I have a really good strategy of like, list 50 things that make you smile or that had made you smile, that do make you smile, that did make you smile, like the sky being blue, you know, or your child's smile or small, tiny things. Mm-hmm. And then make sure you do 3 of those a day.
Wow.
That's a goal.
You know, but the thing is finding yourself again. I have a very dear friend, and she experienced at least 8 losses.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Eight losses within about 2 months. I mean, 2 years. And one was her brother, and her husband was bringing in the table for the repast for the brother. He fell dead. She had her brother and her husband in the mortuary at the same time.
That's tough.
And the deafening silence, you know, everyone is trying to rally around her and be there. And, you know, and she says, I never had an opportunity to find me. And so I was talking to her the other day, and now she's becoming pretty rebellious. You know, but in an odd kind of way, because she's trying to find that balance. But it's like, I don't have to answer to anybody. I don't have to tell you what I'm doing, because you know, it's about me now. So again, finding one's self, finding one's purpose.
Identity is massive. You know, talking about police officers, good example. They wear that uniform for 30 odd years in this country. They do anyway. Till they're whatever age, but they do 30 years service. And if they're uniformed, they've worn that uniform every day. And that represents who they are. And I used to coach them into retirement. And it was amazing how many of them thought they didn't have any transferable skills. They didn't know what they were going to go out into the big wide world and do or be. And they were kind of washed up, you know? It's like, no, it's you take your uniform off, you're naked. It's, you know, you know, emotionally and, all the thought processes are just like, I don't know who I am. I'm naked. I give me something to wear. Give me something to wear. And widows are the same. Our identity has been stripped away. You know, like myself, married 41 years. I had never been a single woman. I went from, well, I had, but, you know, I was single, got married when I was 18. You know, lived in my marital home. I had never lived on my own. I'd never been a single parent before. I've never had total freedom to do absolutely anything I wanted at any minute of the day, because when you're in a partnership, you compromise and you jig along, you know.
Right.
There were so many things that I felt I didn't know who I was. So that's behind the say yes to life, because saying less yes to my life led me to having a year of saying yes to things, just opportunities, and
I mean, my
going after
so
things.
She was so lost, she didn't know how to get the mail out of the mailbox. I mean, she knew how to use
no.
it, but she never did it. She never washed the clothes. She never took the trash out. You know, these
no.
are just things that are so small, but
yeah.
end up being so massive.
Yeah, they do. And that's why it's important to set yourself, you know, I say setting goals, but, you know, it's like, what shall I do today? Well, maybe it is just to take the trash out today. Maybe it is to wash my hair today. You know, maybe it's any of those small things. And, you know, multiple loss, people just do not know who, you know, your poor friend. She was no longer a wife. She was no longer a sister. I don't know who the other relatives or friends were, but all of her world.
Her mother, her mother-in-law.
See, that's
know?
Like, yeah.
It's just, you know, and even me, I lost my brother, and then it was two brothers and my mom.
Yeah.
And I looked at a photograph, and I'm the only one left in it.
Yeah. Oh, we do that too.
And so
yeah.
I thank God for memories and for photographs, you know,
yeah.
and for purpose. And I make it a conscious effort to tell Mr. Magnificent, you, my brains, that I love you and I care for you deeply
yeah.
every opportunity I can. My mother used
yeah.
to say, I love you from the bottom of my socks because my heart just isn't deep enough.
I like that. I
and,
love that.
You know, it really takes people into a dark space, but there is light on the other side.
There is. And this is the first step on any recovery is, you know, I talk about the difference between being willful
mm-hmm.
and being willing. When we're willful, like small children, we want what we want, you know, and we might have a temper tantrum because we don't get it. We create behaviors that means that people notice us, all sorts of things. When we become willing, it's a beautiful, soft word, willing. It's like, okay, I'm willing to surrender here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm willing to heal. I am willing to see what possibilities there are.
Mm.
I am willing to accept. I am willing to acknowledge. These are so, they're so, even the words have carry an energy of
yes,
softness and gentleness, you know, whereas, you know, look, it being willful is, and I don't mean disrespect to anybody because I've been there, I've done these things too, you know, but it's like, well, as you said earlier, you know, if I'm blaming God, that's willfulness. It's kind of, well, why did you take him? Why did you leave me? Why? That's not fair. I've lived a good life. I'm being willful. I'm trying to will something to happen that is not going to happen. When I'm willing and I surrender and I look for support and I just open up my heart, that's where the healing is.
How do parents help small children? One thing that just kind of is a bee in my bonnet is life is what it is. We try to protect and shield our children from reality. Which,
yeah.
again, I have my own philosophy. I can't tell you how to raise your kids. But, you know, you go to the funeral and Nana's laying there in the coffin. And you tell your kid, oh, Nana's just sleeping. That's the big lie. Now the kids
yeah, that's the big lie.
Now the kids is scared to go to sleep. But they don't understand that there's a journey and there's a process. And you know what? Kids will ask you two or three questions, be done with it, and go on to the next thing. And I ran into a little kid and told, we were in the car, just as smart, over there is where my grandma is. And we go over there and we visit her and we talk to her. She's not really there. That's just where her shell and her body is. But her
oh,
soul,
bless
her
yeah.
soul is up in heaven with God. And we
yeah.
can talk to her anytime that we want. It's not a bad thing. And I'm like, bravo. I think the kid
yeah.
was like 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
None of this trauma, none of this fear. Because when I saw my mother pass, I actually saw the soul separate from the shell.
Wow.
Amazing. And when they wheeled her body out, I couldn't just fall and cry and all that, because I knew that it was just like a designer handbag. I had taken everything, on my personal possessions, out of it, and I just had a handbag.
Yeah.
And it was really an amazing experience. Like I said, everybody's not going to have that experience, Julie, because there's trauma that they're still dealing with in some situations.
There is. And, you know, if you work with anybody to help you do that, any kind of therapist, if, you know, your listeners, then that's really what is valuable to do, is that's the healing. It's just getting it all out. It's like, you know, here's a blank bit of paper, so just get it all out. Just get all the venom, get all the viciousness, get all the bitterness, just get it out somewhere. Because in here, it just ends up turning to disease. And that's what upsets me. I see too many women crushing themselves, you know, becoming ill, because they don't know where to start sometimes. They don't know where it's safe to let all this stuff out. They feel guilty for letting this stuff out. They feel shame for letting this stuff out. And it's like, you need to be held by somebody, held that is safe, and say, just let it out, you know, with no judgment. I'll hold you in that space, just to let you let that stuff out. And then we'll look at it. And then we'll see what we want to forgive. Then we'll see what we want to appreciate. Then we'll see what you want to let go of. You know, they talk about letting go of people. It's not the people we let go of. It's all this stuff.
Right.
You know, that's my philosophy anyway.
Yeah, all the personal belongings. It's a negotiation.
Yeah, of course it is. Oh, that's a big one. That's a big one, right? A lot of people I talk to are, you know, how do I do this? You know, how do I throw this away? Because we attach emotion to things. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's hard to give things away or throw things, or you feel like it's another loss. You know, it's like, if I throw those shirts away, I'm throwing him away again.
Right.
You know, right. And it's just understanding, or getting to a point of acceptance, that that's not the truth. It doesn't have to be your truth, but if you choose it to be your truth, that will be what determines your life and your purpose and your value and your joy. You know, what do you, we're always at choice about things, and it's a hard thing to hear, isn't it? You know, it's like, it's hard in any circumstance, but if you're in grief and you're sad and sensitive and fragile, and someone like me comes along and says, well, actually, you're choosing to feel this way. That's, you know, I'd never say it just like that, but you know, that's what they hear. And it's like, well, no, I'm not choosing this. This has happened to me. You said that earlier. You know, this thing has happened to me.
And sometimes things are happening for you.
They happen through us, actually.
Yeah, you don't understand the perfect plan.
No.
You don't understand why this has happened. You don't understand the generational trauma. You don't understand the past life regression. You don't understand what's going to happen in the future.
You don't.
All you have is the present. Okay.
And that's the biggest lesson, because if we live in the present, there is really no grief.
Right.
How could there be?
Absolutely.
Go on.
No. So I want to bring us fast forward. It's been 5 years.
Yes.
And you have reinvented yourself to a degree. You found out really who Julie Foster really is. Tell me about the woman that you are now, and all the exciting, wonderful, beautiful things that have blossomed since your dearly departed husband has transitioned.
I will. I think the first thing is probably about, he died in the December, and February, March time, I went to a charity do where a band were playing, and my friend is the singer in this band. They play Cuban music and they're absolutely amazing. And they give out these little shaker things, you know, while they're singing, and you can shake them and sing along. And at the end, she came over to me. She said, you've got a really good rhythm. I could see that, you know. And I said, well, I've always wanted a drum. And I never knew why. I just knew I liked drumming. And she said, well, why don't you join the band? I said, don't be so stupid. I said, I'm not a musician. I can't join the band. I said, could you? She said, it's Cuban music. It's all about noise and rhythm and fun. She said, just come along and shake some things and you'll be fine. And I thought, this is my first say yes. as I came home and I thought, okay, I could say no for all the reasons I've just mentioned. You know, it was ridiculous. It was stupid. I was whatever age I was then. I don't know, 59 years old, joining a Cuban band. Yeah, right. And I was like, but I could say yes. And I could have the best time finding out if I liked it, making new friends, getting in the music scene, which I love music anyway. So I went along and rehearsed for 3 weeks, shaking maracas. And then one day the band leader put a pair of bongo drums in front of me. And I sort of went, okay, what do I do with these? And he said, you just play with your heart, play from your heart. You have good rhythm, trust your soul. I tell you, it was like, okay, I'm just going to go here. Wow. And I have been playing. I now consider myself a musician. I'm a bongo and percussion player in a Cuban band. I would not have done that if my husband was still here. I just know I wouldn't have. I don't think I would anyway.
Yeah.
But that was my big say. And that started and I thought, you know, I'm going to have a year of saying yes. So I traveled a lot. I'd never traveled on my own, you know, never flown on a plane or anything on my own. So I did that. I'm fortunate to have friends that live in different countries. They all invited me to go. And every time they did, I said, yes, booked my ticket, got on the plane and went and had an amazing time. But my confidence just grew and grew and grew through saying yes to doing different things. I had my days where grief came to visit and she stayed long sometimes and other times she didn't, but I didn't shut her out. I just accepted that she was here today and then tomorrow I had something to say yes to, so I kind of was too busy. I was too busy to have her around, you know. She had her space, she still does. My sister was married last week and it was a fantastic day. Of course I missed Kevin. Of course she missed her dad. You know, we had losses there, but we were saying yes to life last week. We said yes to life that day. It was absolutely fabulous. Wow. And that's what I mean, you know, like that's how I've grown in learning to live. And I keep my house on my own. I bought a new car for myself. I've never had a brand new car. I've always had, you know, secondhand cars. And I thought, I'm worth a new car. Can't get a new car. That was saying yes. So it's just a whole attitude that has allowed me to grow into this new version of me. Yeah.
That's amazing. I want to ask you, and this may not be directed at you personally, but finding love again. There's so many people that have lost a spouse and they, oh no, I'll never love again. Well, you know what? Love is like ice cream. There's many different flavors. You know,
there are.
To close your heart to love is another death.
It is.
It's not going to be the same love that I have with Mr. Magnificent or you had with Kevin, you know, no. But that's not to say that there's not going to be another person. This might be your journey. I went to a wedding before COVID. They were 86 and 89. They just didn't want to be alone. That's what I said too.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and I was like, you know, the kids, oh, you shouldn't get married. Don't tell me what I should do. You know,
no, it's not your life.
Until it's over. So hardening your heart to romance and, you know, even having a, you know, you may not want to get married, but having a suitor or holding someone's hand or a conversation, that's very uncomfortable too, because the first thing the person does is they compare it to the last love. It's not going to be different. Or they go into the, you know, speed dating, whatever, and they give you the whole rundown of what happened in the previous relationship instead of saying yes to something brand new. What's your feelings about that, to that person?
Yeah, no, it's a good question and I don't mind sharing here at all. I think probably about 2 years ago, I thought I would, I wanted someone else to share my life with. I'm good in a partnership. I like companionship. I like sharing things. So I thought, yeah, it's another yes. And I would like to say, you know, to anyone that's listening to this, and if you're in this position, be very aware that when you start this, you are still vulnerable. There's a, you know, however positive I was, I didn't realize till I went on a few dates how vulnerable I was. and building that resilience to go out and try and find someone else, attract someone else, share and find out about people. So I changed my tack because I was sort of, I'm a romantic by nature. And I thought this strategy is not working because I'm looking for something and it's not showing up, right? It's not showing up the way. I thought, I'm just going to go on. Every day I go on is just to see if I would like to make a new friend. So allowing that to unravel, to see, you know, because do I want to spend time with this person? You know, as you would with another friend. And it's like, I've heard people say, and I think it's true, women generally can try, they can fall in love with the potential of somebody because they want it so much. Instead of seeing what truthfully is in front of them and going, well, actually, I want this new friend. Never mind anything else. You know, do I want to spend time with this person in my life?
And take your time.
Absolutely. That's there's just no rush.
You don't have to rush to do anything.
No. It's not a replacement. It's not a replacement.
I had a guest that was on my show, bless her heart. She was catfished. Online dating out of $400,000.
Oh, no, no, no.
In 3 months, Julie.
Oh, April, that's sad.
What in the world was he saying to you online? That's what I want to know. What kind of game was he running? And what she told me was that she was in a very controlling relationship with her first husband.
Yeah.
You know, he told her what to do, what to wear, where to go, who to see, all that. So when he died, he left her a boatload of money. And when he left her this money, she decided that she was not going to be controlled by anybody anymore under any circumstances.
Yeah.
So she fell right into, you know, the victimization and vulnerability. And she started spieling about how much she loved her husband and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, this person got $400,000 out of her. So brains, okay, men and women, because men are lonely. They want
you. Oh, yeah, true. Absolutely.
And, and you'll run across a little cat mama and you know, she want a sugar daddy.
Right? Oh, yeah, they're out there. Yeah.
It's all over, a predator. And they don't want to be alone. And, you know, and that's fine. But companionship, and make sure that the person is, you know, everybody at a certain age got some baggage. Bad credit, alcoholism, X, Y. You have to figure out where you are in your life and what you're willing to accept.
And, you know, it's always a good exercise to understand. Well, it's critical, I think, if you're going to understand yourself first. You need to understand what your values are. What do you really value in life? If this person on this date that you've never met before, using that example, if you listen to their conversation, you can glean whether they're going to be a value match for you or not. They can be as hot as you like. And you can be sitting there wriggling in your seat and thinking, wow, this is like, yeah, you know, it's like I'm on it here. No, 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 no. Listen. Listen to what they say and you will glean their values, because that is more important than anything else. And it's easy blinded when you're you know, lust is a great blindfold.
See, it's much more, you know, it's not as transparent as it used to be, because you actually met an individual a long time ago. Now you are in the cyber freak space. But you better believe I'm going to Google him. I'm going to Google his mama's name.
Oh, yeah. Go research. Yes.
Everybody. Look at Facebook. You know, and I see all of these people on social media. Oh, you're so beautiful. And you have a picture. And then he's next to a yacht. Or he's a doctor.
Oh, I know.
And you don't see anything else. But when you look at the profile, it's just a bunch of women.
Of course it is.
Yeah. You know, and so
that's what they do.
That's exactly what they do. And don't fall into that trap. You tell yourself that you love yourself. You tell yourself that you're
exactly
worthy.
That's
you
the
look
thing.
In the mirror and make yourself feel good. You reflect on the things that and the values that you established with the person that you once upon a time loved.
You love yourself. You know, you have to consider yourself. A friend of mine uses this phrase and I love it. So I'm going to pinch it. Her name's Natalie. And she always says, you're the prize. You are the prize. You know, so somebody has to win you. They have to show you. They have to show up. They have to commit to you. They have to be worthy of you.
Right.
And when you're very vulnerable, that isn't what you do. Mm-mm. You know, so it's just saying to yourself, you've got to beware. But I have had several dates and two couple of relationships in the last couple of years. And they are both very different. And they're both very different to my Kevin, of course. But I've learned lots about me in right. those relationships. You know, it's just right. like, what kind of partner do I want to be is a great question. For myself, you know, who do I want to be in this partnership? And if I can't show up like that person, this isn't right.
Well, you have showed up with high beams on here on the edge. Thank you so much for sharing your personal, intimate, loving, caring story.
Bless but you.
Expanding your bandwidth to embrace and reach out to others. I want people to contact you. I mean, again, like I said, your voice inflection and your work as a negotiator speaks volumes. You know, that's Thank why we connected right away. I felt so comfortable talking to you and, you know, sharing your story, because we're all brains going to experience a loss. We all
that's the, are. And that's, it's fact. It's fact. I know I put something up on my social media. I did some research about how statistics through the world of how the ages that women and men died. When you look at those statistics, you may as well on your wedding day know that you are at some point not going to have your husband with you. Mm-hmm. Men die earlier than women. That's just how it is. So the illusion that you live under, that you'll live together and die together the same day, I'm not saying that never happens, but it is an illusion.
Right. And yeah. So, you know, how do you move forward is what the challenge is. And that is taking one foot in front of the other, one step at a time, one moment at a time, but having someone there to hold your hand is important.
That is the essence of my message. Just to, you know, let someone support you that is there for you. Let someone support you that is going to be your cheerleader. That's going to allow you to say what you want to say, but then come along and go, that's all right, but let's go here. You know, let's go there. Let's do another little thing. And that's the way you grow.
Let's go listen to the band at the Cuban bar.
Yay!
Because Julie is playing tonight. So thank
that
you.
That would be amazing. With COVID, we haven't played much this year, but we have a festival coming up at the end of September. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm excited. I was a part of a women's drum circle too. And we haven't played in a long time. So, but it's something about that frequency. It's something about going deep. That gets there you some of my brains, how to get in contact with you, how to connect with you on your Facebook group. If they want, you know, support in that area, if you're doing some one-on-one coaching, brains, she's a point and a click away. You know, the world is a big old oyster now. So just pick a pearl. So it's not that you can't connect with her. We're connecting. She's in the UK. I'm in the US. So it's very important that, you know, you have that person that you can reach out to that totally understands and empathizes. We don't want sympathy. Yeah. We want empathy. We want somebody that's going to understand. I don't want you feeling sorry for me.
No. And I think that's key, you know, because you will do enough feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah.
You don't need anybody else to feel sorry for you. And that is not going to get you the life you deserve. Mm. You know, we all deserve to have a crack in time while we're here. That's so, you got to be open to that. Well, that's my philosophy and it works. And the ladies I'm working with, actually a lot of them are in the US, which is means I sit up late talking to a lot of people.
I know. A lot of, I have a strong network of people, grief recovery specialists that are here. Yeah. And they work with all types of grief. It's not just, you know, the death of a spouse or a parent. You know, it could be your animal, it could be your finances, it could be your job. Grief.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure.
So how do you process that? How do you get through it? So tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Julie Foster.
Okay, there's two ways really. My best way, my email, my website is juliefoster.co.uk. So that's nice and easy. And my Facebook group is called A Widow's Hats. And I call it that because every day we choose to put a different hat on metaphorically. to say what kind of day we're going to have. So I have lots of fun in there about wearing fantastic hats. And I wear a lot of hats myself. I haven't got one on today. But so it's A Widow's Hats on Facebook. Love to have you along. Just come in there if you're looking for some positivity, inspiration, a bit of lift up. And it's not a group where we regurgitate the sadness all the time. So I'd love to have them along.
That's important. Okay. Because regurgitating is throwing up and it don't taste good.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Julie. Please keep us informed, you know, as to what you're doing. If there's any way that we can help you spread the word here on the Edge.
Thank you.
Conversations, you know, with roundtable conversations, whatever it is that we can do to support you and the masses. Because again, like I said, this is a bullet that all of us are going to get hit with, you know, whether you're a police officer in the US or in the UK.
Yeah. And we'll only make the world better if we work together to do that.
Absolutely. All right.
Thank you so much. Oh, I forgot to do my card.
But you know what? And before we end, we want them to do what? We want them to sign up and subscribe.
Yes, we do. Share, yeah.
Like, and comment. Okay. You can't get away without getting that, you know.
No. Because this is all good.
It's really, really important. That's how we grow in the social media world. It's engagement. Okay?
It is. Yeah, we will be spreading the word. Lovely. Thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
All right, baby. Bye-bye.
Bye.